man vanished from the Lightning Ridge opal fields, but 3 days later his car appeared back in town with his phone, wallet, keys, knife, and tobacco he reportedly did not use. Welcome to Crime Path Podcast. Every case leaves a trail. In each episode, we follow that trail through the available record, the evidence, the testimony, the timelines, and the gaps that remain. We stay with what can be sourced. Where something is alleged, disputed, or unclear, we will say so. Let's begin. On Tuesday, 13th of January 2015, a green Ford Falcon was found parked at an electrical substation on Onyx Street in Lightning Ridge, New South Wales. The car belonged to Bennett Campbell Dominic. Most called him Ben. 3 days earlier, Ben had left his home in Lightning Ridge with his brother Tim and driven west toward the Crookeran opal fields. He told his partner, Ashley Walsh, that he would see her either Sunday afternoon or Monday morning. He did not come home. When the Ford Falcon was found, Ben was not inside it. His phone was in the car. His wallet was there. There was loose money, tobacco, his hunting knife, and the food he had packed for the trip. The keys were in the ignition. A door was unlocked. The radio was missing. There was also White Ox tobacco, a brand witnesses said Ben did not use. The car was in town. Ben had last been seen out at the Crookeran. That created the central question. Did Ben drive the car back to Lightning Ridge himself? Or did someone else drive it there? In June 2020, the New South Wales State Coroner found that Ben died on or shortly after January 10, 2015, in the Crookeran opal fields, Lightning Ridge. But the coroner could not determine the cause of death. She could not determine the manner of death. Homicide could not be excluded. Misadventure could not be excluded. Suicide could not be excluded, although the coroner was not satisfied that Ben died by suicide. What remained was a missing man, a car left in a strange place, an early investigation the coroner later found was flawed, and a family still without the full answer. This is episode one, Vanished in Lightning Ridge. At the time he disappeared, Bennett Campbell Dominic was 41 years old. He had spent much of his life in Lightning Ridge, a town in northwestern New South Wales near the Queensland border. He had two brothers, Tim and Luke, and an adopted brother, Victor Thornton, known to the family as Mark. Tim later described Ben as his best mate. At the time Ben disappeared, he had been in a relationship with Ashley Walsh for about 7 years. They lived in Lightning Ridge with Ben's father, William Dominic, known as Billy, and with Ben and Ashley's three young children. Billy had been diagnosed with cancer in the months before Ben disappeared. Ben and Ashley were caring for him. Ben also had a son from an earlier relationship, Justin White. Justin died by suicide in February 2014, when he was 16. Ben's family told police that Justin's death and Billy's illness had a profound effect on him. The coronial record does not present Ben as one simple thing. It records difficult facts. Ben had long been dependent on alcohol and cannabis. He was well known to local police, including through incidents of alcohol-related violence and domestic violence, and had spent short periods in custody. It also records the way people close to him spoke about him. Ashley said he adored his children. The coroner recorded her description of Ben as a nurturing father, whose caring nature was inseparable from his wild side. Tim said Ben could get wild now and then, but that he was a good father and a lovely man. The Crookeran was central to the investigation. It is about 20 kilometres west of Lightning Ridge. Ashley estimated the drive from town took about 15 minutes, but the area was difficult to search. The coroner described about 5,000 open mining shafts and many routes in and out, including tracks through scrubland. Before moving to the family home in Lightning Ridge, Ben and his family had lived off the grid at a camp on Tim's mining claim. There was no running water and no electricity except a generator. In summer, the region was harsh. On 10th and 11th of January 2015, the maximum temperatures at Lightning Ridge reached 36 and 38 degrees Celsius. Ben knew the Kookaran, but it was still a hazardous place to vanish. On Saturday, January 10th, 2015, Ben and his father drove to Tim's home in Lightning Ridge, collected Tim, and returned to the family home. Tim was in a serious emotional state. His partner had left him on New Year's Day, taking their children with her, and he had called Ben. Ben and Tim decided to travel to the Kookaran to do paid work for a local opal mine operator, Neil Morris. The work involved washing dirt, using a mechanical agitator to separate and sift dirt to detect opals. At about 9:30 that morning, they left in Ben's green Ford Falcon. Ashley told police Ben took frozen food, beer, ice, and food scraps for the chickens he kept at the Kookaran property. The brothers each had a carton of beer. The coroner noted there was no evidence they carried water, and witnesses said Ben was not in the habit of drinking water. When Ben and Tim reached the Kookaran, they visited several people. The exact order and timing could not be reconstructed with certainty. The coroner noted inconsistencies in the evidence, but was satisfied certain events occurred. It seems the brothers first visited a local resident, who said they were in good spirits. At Tank 5, the agitator was broken. Tim said this was frustrating because they had paid work lined up, and Ben started getting angry. One witness said Ben appeared to have had a few drinks, but did not seem aggressive. The findings note that several witnesses said Ben liked doing donuts and burnouts in his car. On the way to Neil Taylor's camp, Ben and Tim stopped at another camp and said they were heading to see Mr. Taylor. Ben then drove Tim to Mr. Taylor's mine site. What happened after that was harder to place in exact order. Tim told police that after Ben dropped him at Mr. Taylor's camp, Ben planned to visit his own camp to feed the animals. Tim said Ben returned 1 or 2 hours later. Mr. Taylor told police that Ben arrived separately at his mining site about 20 minutes after Tim, and that the men then stayed for 2 to 3 hours talking and drinking. At some stage, Ben began talking about Justin. Mr. Taylor said Ben became agitated and upset, then argued with Tim and left in his car. The coroner found it was likely this argument occurred during Ben's second visit to Mr. Taylor's camp, after Ben had visited Bruce Shipway's property. What is not in dispute is that Ben left Mr. Taylor's property by himself in the Ford Falcon. Mr. Taylor noticed that Ben drove away erratically and collided with a large rock, but kept driving. Bruce Shipway lived at a mining camp at the Kookaran. He had known Ben for about 6 years. A man named Antti Ilpola was also at the Kookaran, about 400 meters from Mr. Shipway's property. Mr. Ilpola later died. Mr. Shipway told police he was repairing cars with Mr. Ilpola when Ben arrived on a quad bike. Mr. Ilpola gave the same account. The coroner inferred that Ben had collected a quad bike from the camp at some point that day, although the timing was unclear. According to Mr. Shipway and Mr. Ilpola, Ben drove the quad bike aggressively toward the car they were repairing, possibly as a prank, and collided with it while Mr. Ilpola was underneath. Ben asked Mr. Shipway for beer. Mr. Shipway gave him wine. Ben drank it, then rode the quad bike away. Mr. Shipway said Ben appeared angry, swearing and behaving aggressively. At some point after this, Ben appears to have returned to Mr. Taylor's camp in the Ford Falcon. Tim remembered seeing the food scraps still in the back seat, which meant Ben had not gone to his own camp to feed the chickens as planned. The men continued drinking. After some time, another argument broke out. Ben left again. Witnesses said he was slurring his words and driving erratically. At about 2 o'clock that afternoon, Mr. Pocock saw Ben driving near Molyneux's opal field. Mr. Pocock remembered Ben being alone, doing burnouts while holding a long neck, and travelling east toward the old Cookeran. Neil Schnelliger thought Ben was with Tim. The coroner recorded the conflict neutrally. Then, according to Mr. Shipway and Mr. Ilpola, Ben returned to Mr. Shipway's camp in his car. The precise time was unclear, but it was likely in the afternoon. In his January 2015 statement, Mr. Shipway said Ben returned in the car about 1 or 2 hours after the quad bike incident, yelled at him, got back in the car, and left. In a later interview, Mr. Shipway said he thought he had only seen Ben once that day, when Ben arrived on the quad bike. Mr. Ilpola said Ben returned around 3 o'clock in the afternoon and again asked for alcohol. He said Ben told him the car lights were not working. Mr. Ilpola got into the Ford Falcon to check them. In a later interview, Mr. Ilpola said he was in the driver's seat and that Mr. Shipway was in the front passenger seat, rolling a cigarette. Both Mr. Shipway and Mr. Ilpola told police that Ben drove away from the property. They said that was the last time they saw him. If their account is correct, that appears to be the last known sighting of Ben alive. By 6 o'clock that evening, Ashley had not heard from Ben or Tim. She tried calling Ben's mobile phone about 6 or 7 times. The calls diverted to message bank. Ashley described the mobile phone reception of the Cookeran as good. A man who knew Tim was one of the people Tim spent time with after Ben left Mr. Taylor's camp. Later that night, Tim was still at the Cookeran. The man told police he took Tim by quad bike to a nearby property where they stayed and drank until about 2 o'clock the next morning. He then dropped Tim at a mining camp at Nabia Hill at about 2:30 on Sunday morning. Early on Sunday, January 11th, Tim went to the family home. He and Ashley discussed the fact that neither had been able to contact Ben. They tried calling him again. His phone diverted to message bank. Tim later said there was no way Ben would leave his children and not let anyone know where he was. The evidence at the inquest was that Ben sometimes argued with Ashley, but would rarely go any length of time without calling the children. On Sunday afternoon, two people connected with the planned mining work told Tim they had been driving around looking for Ben because they wanted to meet him at their mining camp the next day. Tim also arranged to meet a local resident the next day to look for Ben. At about 1:30 that Sunday afternoon, Ashley arranged for a friend to drive her to Ben's camp. It did not look as though Ben had been there. There were no car tracks. The dirt at the front of the camp was undisturbed. The quad bike was parked in its normal position. When Ashley returned to Lightning Ridge, she kept trying to reach Ben. But there was still no answer. On Monday, the 12th of January, there was a possible sighting of Ben's car. A local resident was outside his home in Lightning Ridge at about 5:30 that morning when he noticed what he believed was Ben's Ford Falcon driving past toward the town centre. The resident told police he often saw Ben drive past in the mornings. Usually Ben would wave or stop to speak with him. On this occasion, he could not see who was driving because the windows were up. The car did not stop or acknowledge him. The sighting mattered, but it did not establish who was driving. At some stage that Monday, Tim, Ashley, a local resident, and one of Ashley's friends met at the Caltex service station on Onyx Street to discuss searching for Ben. Ben's friends and family searched until about 2 o'clock that afternoon. They did not find him, his car, or his belongings. They searched Ben's camp, including one underground mining shaft. They went to Tank 5, drove around the broader fields, and asked residents whether they had seen Ben. The people they spoke to had not seen Ben or had suggestions about where else to look. At Ben's camp, Ashley saw no sign Ben had been there. She also saw a small blue Esky. That worried her. The evidence was that Ben carried that esky everywhere, with cannabis and a bong inside.
During a later police interview, Mr. Shipway confirmed that on Monday, 12th of January, he had been in Lightning Ridge with Mr. Ilpala, organising repair and registration of a motor vehicle. Mr. Shipway said Mr. Ilpala drove that vehicle into town, even though Mr. Ilpala was unlicensed. Mr. Ilpala later said Mr. Shipway drove. A coroner recorded that inconsistency. At about 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Tuesday, the 13th of January, Ashley and Tim reported Ben missing at Lightning Ridge Police Station. They spoke to Constable Troy Cridland and Inspector Linda Bradbury.
They said they had not seen Ben since about 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon and were concerned about him. By then, about 71 hours had passed since Ben was last seen by Mr. Shipway and Mr. Ilpala.
Tim and Ashley apparently told police they had spoken to the person from whom Ben ordinarily bought cannabis daily, and that Ben had not been there since Saturday. That was out of the ordinary. But Inspector Bradbury doubted the report. She believed she had seen Ben the previous day at the Cowtex with Tim and Ashley. She thought Tim and Ashley were either not telling the truth or had their dates mixed up. Ashley tried to correct this. She said she had been with another man who looked like Ben. She acknowledged speaking to a person Ben was said to have bought cannabis from, but said she had done so because she was trying to find Ben. The coroner later found Inspector Bradbury was mistaken in believing she had seen Ben at the Caltex. That mistake mattered. The coroner found it led police to treat Ashley's report with unwarranted skepticism. It also appears to have delayed attempts to confirm or exclude the sighting through CCTV. Police did not make inquiries with the Caltex and nearby premises until the 20th of January. By the 5th of February, police were told the available Caltex footage did not go back as far as the 12th of January. By then, the opportunity was gone. When Ben was reported missing, police did not complete a written risk assessment. The coroner later accepted the commissioner's concession that this was contrary to the missing person's standard operating procedures in place at the time. That mattered because Ben's circumstances carried clear risk factors. He had been last seen in a hazardous area. He had been drinking. He was dependent on alcohol and cannabis. The temperatures were extreme. At about 6 o'clock that evening, police conducted vehicle patrols of Nine Mile Road, Wyoming, and Kookaran Mining Access Roads. There was no physical record of the area searched. Then, at about 7 o'clock that evening, Ben's Ford Falcon was found. A local resident was walking his dog at the sports fields on Onyx Street when he noticed a green sedan parked in the substation across the road. It was hard to see from the roadway. The resident noticed that he was leaving footprints in the black soil and that there were no other footprints or tire marks near the car. That made him think the car had been abandoned for days because it had not recently rained. He contacted police. Senior Constable Morgan Ramsey and Constable Abanoob Guhar attended, and the resident escorted them to the car. Senior Constable Ramsey recognized it as Ben's Ford Falcon. He saw the keys in the ignition and noticed a foul smell from inside the vehicle. Police seized the keys and mobile phone and left the location. The coroner later found that, on any view, the discovery of the car was a reason for significant concern. The driver's side window was fully down. The rear driver's side window was halfway down. A door was unlocked. The radio was missing. Ben's phone was in the center console. His hunting knife was in the car. The food he had packed was untouched and rotting. There was money, and there were pouches of white ox tobacco. The car was about 30 kilometers from where Ben was last seen and about 300 meters from the Outback Resort. Ben was banned from the pub, and the coroner found it likely he would have been noticed if he had tried to enter. Detective Senior Constable Tilly Shrubsole, the officer in charge of the coronial investigation, later gave the opinion that someone other than Ben left the car at the substation. The coroner placed great weight on that opinion because of Detective Senior Constable Shrubsole's local knowledge. She could not understand how someone as well known in Lightning Ridge as Ben could have driven into town undetected. She also said someone could have driven Ben's car to the substation without being seen by taking one of the many tracks through scrubland from the Cuckoran into town. But there was a problem with that hypothesis. Mr. Lowe's possible sighting would put Ben's car on the other side of Lightning Ridge. The coroner concluded that Ben did not drive his car back to town, but there was not enough evidence to say who did, which route they took, or why. The police response to the car became a major focus at the inquest. On Thursday, January 15th, Inspector Bradbury and Scene of Crime Officer Tanya Bobacco attended the substation where the Ford Falcon remained parked and unsecured. Scene of Crime Officer Bobacco had not been briefed on the missing person investigation and did not understand herself to be attending as a crime scene officer. Inspector Bradbury opened the boot while wearing protective equipment, then opened the back door and located personal items, including the hunting knife, cash, beer cans, White Ox tobacco, the food Ashley had packed, and food scraps for the animals. The car was not left in place for forensic examination. Inspector Bradbury drove it from the substation to Lightning Ridge Police Station. The coroner later found the response to the discovery of Ben's car was deficient. A forensic investigator should have examined the car and surrounding area. Exhibits should have been seized for forensic analysis. Senior officers should have reconsidered the risk level. The homicide squad should have been notified immediately once that possibility was apparent. That did not happen until January the 20th. On the 16th of January, Detective Senior Constable Stephen Innes recorded that Ben's vehicle had not been forensically examined and that no ground search had been done. On the 17th of January, he created an 18-point investigation plan. The coroner did not criticize that plan, but found many tasks needed to have been identified earlier. By January 17th, Ben had been missing in summer, in a harsh climate, for almost a week. If he had suffered misadventure, his chances of survival were likely gone. If he had met with foul play, evidence was potentially being compromised. The first documented search of the area around the car by an officer from Dubbo Crime Scene occurred on the 19th of January, 6 days after Ben was reported missing and 6 days after the car was found. On the 20th of January, Strike Force Berong was created. That same day, Detective Sergeant Stephen Hunt of the Homicide Squad was notified that an investigation had commenced. His notes recorded the phrase, "missing person, now possibly murdered." It is unclear what prompted police at that stage to consider that Ben may have been murdered. From January 19th, when Senior Constable Mark Fitzpatrick, a trained search and rescue operative, joined the investigation, the search became more systematic. Later searches involved emergency services, trail bikes, mine shaft inspections, police divers, and pole air. Those searches did not locate Ben. The coroner found that by the time the more systematic searches occurred, they could realistically only have been directed at locating and recovering Ben's body. Investigators considered several possible explanations. One was foul play. The coroner could not make a finding that Ben was intentionally killed by any person, known or unknown. But she did have serious suspicion that Ben was subject to foul play and recommended referral to the unsolved homicide team. Police attention had turned in part to Mr. Shipway and Mr. Ilpola because they appeared to be the last known people to see Ben alive. Their accounts placed both men in or near Ben's car on January the 10th. Mr. Ilpola said he sat in the driver's seat to check the lights, and that Mr. Shipway sat in the front passenger seat and rolled and lit a cigarette. This mattered because police found White Ox tobacco in Ben's car,
and witnesses said Ben did not use that brand. Mr. Shipway later confirmed he used White Ox tobacco. On the 5th of June, 2015, police received confirmation that Mr. Shipway's DNA matched a sample taken from a White Ox tobacco packet in the Ford Falcon. Mr. Ilpola's later account could explain why Mr. Shipway had been in the car. But in his first statement, Mr. Shipway had not mentioned the car lights or the cigarette. The coroner recorded these matters carefully. She did not make a finding that Mr. Shipway or Mr. Ilpola caused Ben's death. A crime scene warrant was used to inspect Mr. Shipway's camp in May 2015. Forensic examination did not detect traces of blood or bodily fluid. Police also considered Tim and Ashley. By late January, there appeared to be an investigative theory that they may have been having an affair and may have been involved in Ben's disappearance. The coroner found this theory was not supported by evidence, apart from unrelated information provided by Victor Thornton. The coroner found no evidence directing suspicion at Ashley or Tim, and abundant evidence of their love and concern for Ben. Another possibility was suicide. The coroner was required to consider it, but suicide cannot be presumed in that jurisdiction. There was evidence that Ben's psychological state may have been in decline before his death, possibly in combination with heavy drinking and cannabis abuse. His father's cancer diagnosis and Justin's suicide had greatly upset him. On January 15th, Bruce and Greg Dunn told Inspector Bradbury that Ben had made threats to harm himself. Later that day, Billy Dominic told Inspector Bradbury that Ben had threatened jumping down a mine hole and hanging himself. Because of that evidence, the coroner found suicide could not be excluded. But there was also evidence from people who knew Ben best that he would not have taken his own life. Tim and Ashley did not believe he would have done so. There was no note or message. There was no evidence of a previous attempt. Ben did not have life insurance. The apparent involvement of a third party in abandoning Ben's car also pointed away from deliberate self-harm. For those reasons, the coroner could not exclude suicide, but was not satisfied that Ben died by suicide. The third possibility was misadventure. The Cookeran was dangerous. It was dotted with uncovered mine shafts. The climate was unforgiving. The coroner found there was no physical evidence allowing her to find that Ben died by misadventure. The fact that the car was in town and the quad bike was at the camp, both fairly undamaged, pointed away from some forms of accidental death. Even so, because of the geography of Lightning Ridge, misadventure could not be excluded. The inquest also examined the police investigation. The Commissioner of Police made concessions about deficiencies in the missing person investigation, including case management in the critical early days, compliance with the missing person's standard operating procedures, and training around those procedures. The coroner found Ben should have been assessed as high risk when he was reported missing, especially because of his alcohol and cannabis dependence, his intoxication when last seen, the geography of the area, and the heat. She found the mistaken Caltex sighting affected the early investigation. Ashley's report was treated with unwarranted skepticism, and that skepticism diverted attention while more genuine leads may have gone cold. The response to the car was lacking. The car was a significant clue. The area around it should have been searched sooner. It should have been treated as a possible crime scene. The searches before January 16th were not documented in writing, and none were marked on a map until after January 20th. Police did not make a concerted effort early enough to retrace Ben's last known movements. The people most likely to know about Ben's movements were at the Cookeran. Police should have inspected Ben's camp, canvassed nearby camps, and taken statements from people who had seen Ben on January 10th at the earliest opportunity. Police also failed to obtain CCTV promptly before it was overwritten.
That footage may have shown signs of Ben or his car, or assisted in establishing movements of Mr. Shipway or Mr. Ilpala after Ben disappeared. In June 2020, the state coroner made formal findings.
The person who died was Bennett Campbell Dominic. He died on or shortly after January 10, 2015. He died in the Coocoran Opal Fields, Lightning Ridge, New South Wales. The cause and manner of his death could not be determined. The coroner made three recommendations. First, that Ben's disappearance be referred to the unsolved homicide team of the New South Wales Police Force. Second, that the missing persons registry consider changing the procedures to make clear that the geography surrounding Lightning Ridge is the kind of geography that should give rise to a high-risk red flag. Third, that induction training for new officers at Lightning Ridge and nearby stations include the missing persons' standard operating procedures, with attention to how the geography of Lightning Ridge can seriously increase the risk to a missing person's health and safety. At the inquest, Tim spoke about the unanswered questions surrounding Ben's disappearance and the family's anguish at not being able to give him a proper burial. Ben's father, Billy, died without ever learning what happened to his son. The official finding is narrow because the evidence required it to be narrow. Bennett Campbell Dominic, known as Ben, died on or shortly after January 10, 2015, in the Coocoran Opal Fields. His cause and manner of death remain undetermined. No one has been found legally responsible for his death. No final account explains the car at the substation. And until that account is found, the disappearance of Ben remains a case defined not only by what is known, but by what was missed in the days when every hour mattered. That's the story as we know it. In cases like this, the record can contain confirmed facts, disputed claims, and unanswered questions. Where the sources are unclear, we have tried to say so clearly. You'll find the sources for this episode in the show notes. If you found this episode worth listening to, follow the show, leave a rating, or share it with someone who's interested in true crime told with care and respect. I'm Elias Vale, and this has been Crime Path Podcast. Until next time, thank you for listening.